Hey, everybody, welcome to the Fundamentalists Podcast. My name is Elliot Morgan. I do comedy. I'm here with my podcasting partner, Peter Rollins, who does philosophy. We are housemates. We live in Los Angeles, California. We do a podcast about life, how to cope with it, how to cope with the anxieties that are inside of us, and in healthy ways. This particular episode is on advice and how to give advice, what is good advice, what is bad advice, and the order of service, as we typically do in this podcast, is first announced. And then I'm going to tell you guys a little something-something. Pete is going to do a little reflection. He's going to say a little something-something, and then we're going to talk about some something-somethings, and then we're going to do some takeaways at the end of it, and then that's the end of the podcast.
Yep, that's the
news. So, first and foremost, first announcement. You ready for this?
Yep.
We are doing The Fundamentalists Live on August 29th.
Yes, it's called FunCon.
FunCon, yeah.
We are hoping for 15,000 people.
15,000 people, hopefully. And yeah. We'll have people out in the parking lot. It's going to be beautiful. And it is at Central Avenue Church in Glendale, California, which is very close to Los Angeles, California. And tickets are selling like they're gosh darn hotcakes, Pete. Yeah. I tell you what.
I think it's a revival. I would say a revival is happening.
We should get a tent.
Yeah. Oh man, that's a great idea.
Yeah. We messed up. Maybe we can get a tent.
Yeah.
It's going to be all fun sorts of things. We're going to have drinks. You can get tickets at peterrollins.com, and there's going to be a bit of stand-up, a bit of philosophy, and then we're going to do a live podcast with a Q&A at the end. So if you want to come hang out, chat, we're going to hang out afterward, feel free to do that.
Free drinks. Yeah, which is nice. So, you know, it's $20, but actually you're getting free drinks with that.
Yeah, actually, you will owe us money by this more time, or we'll owe you money, rather. And this particular podcast, The Fundamentalists, is currently brought to you by the lovely folks over at Wink, W-I-N-C, a wine company. And if you would like to help support the podcast, and you also happen to like wine, you can go to trywink.com/thefundamentalists. That's TRYWINC, Wink with a C, /thefundamentalists to get $25 off of your order.
You can drink
helps us
along with us, and that is your communion wine. So, you know, this is The Fundamentalists. We have an order of service. We have our announcements, and we have our communion.
Look at us. We are properly themed.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. I've said that to you before. I think, you know, you have to sadly like theme every, if you can theme it within an inch of its life, then people will finally listen.
Yeah, we're really finally on episode, whatever this is, 22 or 23 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
It's very exciting. We're learning. But yeah, that's the general idea. Any other announcements that you want to talk about? You have your enduring.
I can tell people about enduring love.
Please do. Yeah, this is so exciting.
This is exciting. So I'm a writer, as people know. But what I like to do is sometimes write more serious books and then get those ideas and put them into a different form. So we're making a short film at the moment. It's going to be coming out soon. I also wrote a book of parables a while back, and now I've written a book of fairy tales. And I worked with an illustrator called Naders, and we have created a comic book called Enduring Love, because love is so difficult to endure. And it's about all of these cute little animals who live in a place called a lonely forest, who are trying to endure the tortures of love and life and meaning.
Feel-good fairy tale of the year.
Feel-good fairy tale of the year. And there's only going to be 500 copies. We're making it limited edition, very tight. Now, I will say this. It's probably going to be 500 copies, but in a year or two, if someone comes along and offers me millions to put out more, we probably will. So I don't want to say there's only going to ever be 500,
sure.
But the initial print run's going to be 500.
No, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
covering my bases. We're actually printing 5 million.
Yeah, that's what you do. You dress for the job that you want.
So, yeah,
should print 5 million. Well, that's very exciting, and I think that does it for the announcements of this particular episode. Unless you want to,
You plug something. Can I plug something for you? It's only for people here in LA, but you're doing a crowd work show, which I'm very excited
about
seeing.
I'm doing Mike Falzone's Crowdwork show on August 4th, but that's going to come out.
Oh, before this does.
Yeah.
So you just missed a really good Crowdwork show with Mike Falzone and
Elliot. This goes out Sunday. So this will be after Saturday, which will be, so this is obsolete. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'll be at a university on
think that's what we should do. We should just always publicize things that are going to be obsolete by the time yeah, people listen to them.
I'm really bad about that. Yeah, gosh.
You're doing a university?
I'm doing a Clemson University. Thank God. It's for the exact amount that... Oh, you're fine. It's the exact amount that whatever is going on with my bank right now. Before we hit record, just to let you guys in on this cool thing, I'm in like a bit of a panic, and I'm sorry if I come off stressed out, but I'm just having some banking issues, and I don't know if any of our listeners have ever experienced banking issues, but there's a bit of a panic, and I'll figure it out, but it's going to be a couple phone calls. So anyway, I have to deal with that.
So that there might be an undertone of panic and distraction.
Yeah, while talking about advice. Yeah. So it should be really good. Yeah. In terms of like leading into your kind of thoughts on advice and your ideas on advice, I think I come from the digital world of YouTube, and many people on YouTube, many good friends of mine, myself included, advice is sort of a lot of what we do. Like there's a lot of people who daily will ask for advice, and I know you experience this in your line of work probably way more than we do, and it's a very sort of like interesting thing. I think it's a ever renewable source of kind of talking about things, because when people are like, hey, I'm going through this, what's going on, it's very easy for me to be like, oh, well, here's my take on it. And I always try to add something different, which I think is probably the wrong approach, because I'm not even going for like what's the most accurate or right thing to say to somebody. But yeah, I feel like at times I've said some advice to people that I can hear myself justifying my own actions or wanting to live vicariously through them. And so it's a very dangerous, it's a dangerous world. But at the same time, I often wonder if really people are taking anybody's advice to heart, or if they're just sort of doing their own thing so that they can feel justified in their actions. Pete, I'm handing the reins to you.
Okay.
What if it cuts back to me and I'm just like, it cuts back. Good God. It's like I'm filming. Yeah. What if it the next thing I say is just me on the phone with Bank of America?
I know. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping you're straight on the phone with them.
Yeah, Pete. Yeah. Okay. So there's a charge that's too big.
Piece of advice, I'd get us sorted out.
Yeah. Piece of advice, call them.
Yeah. Piece of advice, don't do a podcast until you've sorted this out. Mm-hmm. There's redundant advice.
Yeah. Yeah. But here we are.
Yeah. Well, you know, funny enough, I wondered whether a lot of your work is about that a lot of the YouTuber community, a lot of younger people are looking at you as older brothers, older sisters, and in a sense, you know, are looking for advice from you. So I guess that has been a large part of your work.
It's a huge part of it. And I think it's so funny to seek advice from, you know, like, I don't know, like, wouldn't you want to know, like, doctors?
Yeah, I've met your friends.
Yeah,
like... I know you.
Yeah, we're an insane group of people, all with our own issues. There was something that happened yesterday where it was like this microcosm of, like, all four of everyone's worst qualities, myself included, like, 100% happened, just in this weird, like... It was such a good day, and then it was like this thunderstorm just kind of came over everything, and it was like, it was kind of beautiful in a sense, because I was like, oh, this is me being how I can be, which is overly, I was told later by my buddies, it's kind of condescending and overly direct and maybe a little aggressive, and then other people were doing their kind of things and their defense mechanisms, and it was kind of just one of those things where I'm like, this is what it is. Like, this is us, that we're a dysfunctional group of people who somehow end up making this work, and it's wonderful and amazing and I love it very much. But then I'm like, who would ask? Yeah. Who would go to us and be like, what can we get from, like, what would you do in
what
this scenario?
Wisdom.
What should I major in? And yeah. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, look at us. Like, we're not, yes. I mean, I get it, because it's like, we're, you know, we kind of, for those who are listening or maybe aren't familiar, I do a thing called The Valley Folk, which is like a internet comedy group, and we're a group of friends who've worked together for, you know, 6 years now, and which is in Hollywood is a very long amount of time. And so we're trying to make that work, but it's yeah, that's some context. But anyway, that's where
very good.
So what's your thoughts,
okay,
Pete? Let's dive in.
Okay, first of all, I suppose let's just list very quickly the different positions people take on advice. So if you're taking advice, I suppose there's a few different ones you can say. Well, just don't take advice. Don't listen to people. They don't know what you're going through, whatever. Advice taking is a bad thing. Someone else might say, well, no, you know, take advice from someone who is smarter, more well-read, or more life experience. And then someone else might say, listen to your own advice. You know, listen to, you know yourself best, so have a think about what you're going through, listen to yourself. So those are kind of three common ones. And then if you're giving advice, some people say, well, never give it. Or somebody might say, yeah, no, it's okay to give advice. So those are the common things. And to be honest, every single one of them, it's like there's pros and cons, and there's times when, you know, it's good to give advice, times when it's not. But I don't want to talk about any of those, because I think that's all very superficial and everyday. And of course we give advice sometimes, sometimes we don't. But what does it mean to get really good advice? And this is where I want to, instead of talking about, you know, either you listen to another or you don't, there's an interesting part of advice where you listen to the other that is inside yourself. So the real key to giving and taking advice is actually allowing some other part of yourself to speak and to give you wisdom. So to give you an example.
Oh, I got lots to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And two examples. One is often, first of all, whenever you're seeking advice, what happens is without you even realizing it, the very person you go to get the advice from tells you what you already want to hear. So, you know, the fact that you pick, I pick you and not someone else, that kind of shows that unconsciously I want to hear something, because sure, I do know you and I kind of can guess pretty much what you might say in a given situation, but I might not be able to admit that to myself. So what I do is I go to you for advice, and then I think to myself, oh, I'm going to you for advice because there's something in me that I think, but I can't admit it to myself, and I want you to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're listening to this other voice within you that you can't see directly.
Oh, that's interesting. You're using somebody else as a mouthpiece for yourself, basically.
Yes, yeah.
That's cool.
So very often a lot of advice is that you watch who the person goes to, why they go to them, and it tells you what they want to hear. Now, that doesn't mean that advice is good advice, but it means that it's coming from the deepest recesses of your anxieties and desires.
Yeah.
So you get to know something about your desires, because we hide our desires from ourselves all the time. You know, we might want to kill someone, but we don't let ourselves admit that. Then the other one is the other side, is where take an example of, I was out with some friends a while back. One of them was asking about whether they should change their jobs, and the other person said, listen, I absolutely think you should. You've been in this job for like 5 or 6 years. It's time to move on, go into something new. You're getting bored with your original job. You know, remember the good times, but also remember all the bad times. It's time to move on. Now, interestingly, I knew this person, and I knew that they were in a long-term relationship that was roughly 5 or 6 years, that they weren't that happy and that they were thinking about somebody else. And so what was really funny was this guy was giving this advice about work, but it sounded so much like the very thing that he was wrestling with.
You go to work, you hardly ever have sex,
you're not happy in it, you know, you're thinking about something else. It was like, it was incredible. And again, then what happens is often when someone's giving advice, they're actually talking to themselves, but they don't know it. So, you know, the person, by you ask, this is a little trick you can do, you ask someone for advice, and then they'll tell you something about their life through the advice that they give you.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
You know, it's a terrible...
It's a nice way to get to know somebody.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What do you think about this? And you're like, well, when my mom was... Yeah.
And, but the thing is, they think they're talking to you. That's the very trick. They're giving you advice. I think you should do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes that reflects some dilemma that person is facing in themselves. You know, Freud was very good on this. Freud, in his introductory lectures to psychoanalysis, which I'd recommend anyone read, they're very readable. I mean, he gives loads of examples, and one of them is he was talking to this woman on the street, and she was just about to get married, and he was asking about it, and she couldn't remember her husband-to-be's name. It just blanked, you know, people blank. And she was like, oh, that's really weird, sorry. And then she said his name. And Freud was like, you know, I felt bad, like I wanted to let her know that like the relationship probably was going to be a disaster,
but I didn't
feel I should. And he says, and sure enough, 2 years later, they were divorced. But it was like this, if she could have listened to herself, there was something weird about the name being blocked out. Like,
yeah,
I don't want to say this name, was saying something about her desires that she wasn't actually aware of. So I think the really interesting thing is, how do we listen to the other that is within ourselves, because they, at least, it's not that what the it's not the that the unconscious knows the right answer, but the unconscious kind of lets us know what we want.
Yeah,
yeah.
This reminds me of I know you're. I always hesitate to talk about this because some of this stuff is so corny, and I just feel like it's like silly to talk about because it's just kind of so in my like. I don't know. It's like in my wheelhouse to the point that it's just like cringy a little bit. But I took like a month off from it, but I do like journaling pretty regularly. And I did it mostly because I felt like it would help me creatively. And I felt like it would help me cope with, you know, life or whatever. And somebody's, I don't know, somebody's ever good.
And your teenage female friend recommended it.
Exactly. Yeah. Who did I buy the journal with? I remember.
I've seen your pink journal with the lock on it.
Yep.
Yeah, and the little furry thing.
Yeah, why is the lock hole all banged up, by the way?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No.
I do it, you know, every... There's no lock on it. Pete can read it at any time.
Oh, well.
I wouldn't. But
No.
There's nothing
no desire.
About, there's nothing about
to see your masturbation schedule.
Yeah, yeah. I have a, it's a that's on my Google Drive. It's an Excel sheet. But anyway, I do it, and then like what I found is that the only time it's actually effective, I was like, who am I talking to? Like I'm doing it. I'm like, dear journal. Like I hate. Like I was like, this feels very silly to be yeah. like I'm talking to some ethereal like. Other like sometimes I'm like maybe I'm talking to like my therapist in some way or maybe and then I was like oh if I just like talk to myself oh it was Gary Shandling's documentary that's what made me want to do it was Gary Shandling's documentary which you should watch on HBO if you haven't but what I found is that when I just talk to myself and give myself advice and mm-hmm. say like you're not gonna do this now it's like the only time that I actually listen to anybody
yeah
but and even then it's like hit or miss but yeah. if somebody's like because, you know, my therapist doesn't give me overt advice. He's not like, you should do this, this, and this. Or he might give me like a book recommendation. But like in the, and then of course the advice I'm giving myself is 100% advice he would give me. But he doesn't, you know, he's a smart boy. And so like, it's very, it's interesting that that's like the few times that I'm like, oh, okay. And I know that's not directly, you know, I know it's probably way more nuanced than that to listen to another part of yourself. But I find that it helps to just be like, to take a moment and be like, Elliot, you're going to do this, and then you're going to do that, and now it's time to do this, and like, do it, and like, you know, yeah. all that stuff.
Although, here's the thing, because I think you're totally right, and that's why people journal. You think that it's like writing a love letter, you think you're writing to somebody else, but it's really a message in a bottle you're throwing out, but you're hoping that the shore will bring it back to you.
Beautiful because, metaphor.
What's that?
Beautiful metaphor.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, because you're the one who ends up reading the letter 10 times. You may not even send it. In a sense, you have to write it to another in order to receive it yourself, which is the structure of prayer, in a sense, is you...
Very
you,
much like
you
prayer.
You throw yeah. out to something else, but really it's a way to encounter the inner kind of moans and groans of your being.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so prayer is not a theistic thing. It's a human way of throwing out to receive back. But here's where you might start sabotaging yourself is your own smartness is because if you're writing a journal, you're writing it weirdly as to some other. It doesn't exist. They don't even, they're just writing it to some other and then you discover something about yourself. But if you then know you're doing that, then your consciousness is in the driver's seat again. And so you may give yourself bad advice. So this is why therapy is important is like, actually, as soon as you start to know the structure, you destroy it.
You're right.
Because in one sense, it only right. works when it's invisible. That's why you need another person to point out.
Yeah.
Because it's weirdly, it's like you cannot directly see the advice. You can only indirectly glimpse it. So as soon as you're kind of like, oh, I'm going to write this journal to myself, now you're conscious of it. And you'll still give yourself good advice. But the best thing to do is, you know, just sit down and pretend. Try to forget about this structure.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm giving myself, you're saying I'll give myself bad advice, like ultimately it won't work out well?
Well, or you won't hear the other in yourself because the only way the
It's
other,
rare that I do, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's, yeah, the other only comes out when when you're so oblivious to it. But whenever you start to go, no, I'm going to listen to myself, then you're just listening to your conscious projections of mm-hmm, yourself. Mm-hmm.
It becomes like a little bit more of a game at that point, yeah. where you're just sort of like, this is, or like pretending a little bit.
Yeah, pretending. You start to, it's a weird thing where you kind of even start to have dreams and stuff that are so obvious, because in one sense you're trying to, you know, you're trying to listen to yourself. This is why in therapy, it's very hard yeah. not to have yeah. another helping you, because in one sense you need some trained other who can help you catch yourself off guard.
I was going through this one time in, and I don't know if this relates exactly, but the kind of like knowing the game a little bit, yeah. and it's difficult in therapy because I can be a little like presumptuous in thinking that the therapist doesn't quite like can't would be so thrown off kilter if I was just to be completely like he did this thing where we were talking about. He gave me some feedback on a situation that I was in, and he basically was like, if I were you in this situation, he was like, I would run. He was like, I would get out of this. He was like, just book it. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it was like 20 minutes later, and he was like, or maybe not. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't do it. And I hesitated to go, you're saying maybe not, so that I don't make the decision so that I get your approval. But I didn't say that. I was like, I'm going to keep that to myself. Because otherwise, what if I like reveal that I know that he's doing that, and then like it's like the it like shines a light on it in a way that I don't know. It's fun. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Advice is tricky. But going back to advice, what is your response to people when they're like, Pete, I grew up in the church. I grew up in you know, X, Y, and Z. I would da 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 da, and now I'm leaving it. What should I do? What's your first sort of like, what's your go-to? How do you respond? Because I know you have to have at this point kind of like, you know how to answer that question, I would assume.
Yeah.
People are just like, what do I do now?
Yeah. I mean, although as you mentioned earlier a little bit, is that you kind of have to have a feel for where the question's coming from. And sometimes that only happens over time. So for example, someone might be asking you a question because they look up to you, you're an authority figure. They want you to say something that they will then do. Or sometimes they don't like you at all. They're asking your advice to trap you, or to kind of try to usurp you, or to mm-hmm. try to kind of to throw it back in your face. Now, they may not even know they're doing that, but there's that. Or there's inquisitiveness. So sometimes it's interesting to try to get a feel for where the question's coming from. But often the go-to is to start asking, oh, you know, why are you coming to me with this question? You know, just to start to unpick it, to start to try to see what they already know but don't know that they know,
yeah.
by going to me and instead of anybody else they could go to. So you start to, in one sense, the job is to reveal what they know but don't know that they know. It's like in poker. I play poker, and sometimes you know that you should fold a hand, but you do want to fold a hand. And it's great to have, you know, if a friend going like, my goodness, I would fold that straight away.
Yeah.
And you're asking their advice, oh, you know, should I fold this? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. And you know you should, yeah. but you don't want to. But you know deep down, and them giving you the advice to fold it is just you hearing what you know but don't want to admit to yourself, because you've got money in the pot and you're like, I don't want to give that money up.
Yeah, my love life.
Yeah.
Hey. What's the worst piece of advice you personally have ever gotten? Do you know off the top of your head?
Oh, I don't know about that. Do you have any thoughts about yours?
Oh, I mean, I've done so many jobs in this industry that I should not have done.
Is that right? Advice that you would give yourself, or no advice that people have given you?
Advice that I've gotten, yeah, just from like representation and stuff, have been like, definitely do this thing, it'll be good for you. And then I do it and I'm like, this feels bad. And I don't listen. Listen to them out of fear of making them upset. So I take their advice, but really I'm like, I should have listened to myself the entire time.
No, there's probably experiences like that where I get advice a lot. Funnily enough, talking about the fairy tale book and the movie is to do stuff like that through publishing houses and in the official way.
The structure.
And, you know, I feel it. There's times I've done that, but it doesn't sit well with me.
Right.
But yeah.
It's we're both in these kind of interesting spots right now, I think, where it's like, you know, like I did this the filmed the hour, and like you release this book and you're doing the film, and like we're doing this the Valley Folk thing, and both of our strategies are kind of aligned in this in the same way of kind of doing it completely on our own, not yeah. necessarily because it's this kind of I don't know, a lot of rappers and like that kind of thing, well, young rappers when they're starting out will pride themselves on being very independent, and it's sort of like it's a cool branding thing on one end to be like, I'm going to do my own thing and not go to the publishing house, not go to the whatever, and I'm going to be, you know, self-sufficient and or go to my audience directly with things, which I think is what's so great about the Patreon system. But it's interesting that we're both yeah. following, and I'm curious how it's gonna work out, because there's been so many rejections to the status quo that I'm just curious as to how it'll end. It seems to be working out so far, but it's yeah. fun, it's exciting. Let's and what see. Are the odds that we're both doing the same kind of like weaving? It's like, I mean, I guess it makes sense. But I think we'd be doing the same yeah. thing. Regardless.
Well, like finds like, and since we're both independently doing that, but that's probably one of the ways we connected, as we, in a sense, had a similar vision, because people do that. We all do it. C.S. Lewis said this, which I like. He said, there's two types of best friend. He said, the first type of best friend is you meet someone at a party or whatever, and they love the same movies you do. They love the same books. You have the same ideas. You feel like a kindred spirit. Mm-hmm. And then he said, the other type of best friend is where you meet them, and again, in a sense, they've read all the same books as you and the movies you, but they've come to all the wrong conclusions.
And that's where I come in.
And that's where you come in, yes, exactly. And the other person thinks it about you, and you become really good friends because of the back and forth and the disagreement. But I'm going, like, those are two types of people I think we are all drawn to.
Yeah, you know? That's fun. I like yeah. that a lot.
Oh, here, I've got a thought as well on advice.
Please.
See where this goes.
Let's see it.
But another issue with it is, so one of the differences you could say between psychotherapy and psychoanalysis.
Ooh, this ought to be good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Don't pick it up. Is psychotherapy broadly works on the idea, not completely, but if you're a psychotherapist, you're working with people who are, you know, have difficulties in their life, and if you kind of nudge them the right way, they will do the right thing. Just like your arm will heal if it's put in the right cast. Like, our bodies want to heal. We want to heal. We want to do the right thing. We just have a little bit of difficulty. Psychoanalysis is more appropriate when you come to the idea that sometimes we do not want to heal, that we want to self-sabotage, that we want to hurt ourselves, that we want to destroy ourselves in various ways. And so in psychotherapy, and a lot of people are psychotherapeutic psychoanalysts, which means that they, you know, they use both practices. But if you go to a counselor is often there to give you counsel. Oh, you should break up with that person, or you shouldn't. But it's not very useful if you're self-destructive, as in you want to do the wrong thing. You want to destroy yourself. You don't want to consciously, but you're always sabotaging yourself. In psychoanalysis, it's a form of therapy that explores why we do want to do things that are healthy.
Yeah.
And so the problem with the advice is, if someone is in that state where they're self-sabotagers, then advice is of no use, because they haven't worked out why they want to self-sabotage. So another thing I do often is try to work out, is the person someone who is being self-destructive, and therefore advice is not going to be much use at all.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like a thing where there is the, you know, we've talked about the lost object kind of thing, and everybody seeking that, like, if only this kind yeah. of thing, then I would be happy. And I talk a lot about that with some friends of mine. But like the one, I feel like counseling and that mode of like, or whether it's any kind of counseling, really, it's very goal oriented and very like, once this, you know, bad relationship, once I'm out of this toxic relationship that I don't, you know, I deserve better, and that whole like thing, which can be very valid, once I'm out of that, then I'll be happy. And then what happens is you get that advice, you get that person, that counselor going like, you should do this, and then you follow that advice, and then you're like, great, you have for a brief time that like satisfaction of that lost object being fulfilled, that like relationship is no longer a problem, or you have that relationship, yada yada yada, and then of course the melancholy sets in, and then, you know, you're on to the next thing or whatever that you yeah. you want. And psychoanalysis seems to be the thing that's like no, you can do that, like you yeah. can get that, but you're still going to constantly be seeking that thing, and that's where, it comes into, that's where we step in. That's where Freud steps in and goes like, all right, well, here's how you're going to struggle throughout this.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, yeah, that's why so many people, I think I could be wrong, but so many people give a bad rap to so much therapy because it's like, oh, are you ever done? Is it ever done? And it's like, well, no. Like, yeah. I hope it's not done. Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying that, like, I'm coming from a place of brokenness or whatever, but there's always going to be something where it's like, want, get, and or want, fail. And it's, yeah, it's a...
Yeah. Although I think that there's a way of kind of escaping that drive, but yeah, you bring it up very well, is that there's a difference between, say, someone's in a toxic relationship and they get advice, listen, you should leave that person. They're like, okay, that's good advice. But there's sometimes, and more often than we think, the person will then go into a second toxic relationship or a third toxic relationship.
Yeah.
And then what you do is, if you give advice, you know, leave the toxic relationship, that's fine. But the bigger question is, do you want a toxic relationship? Now, some people don't, as in you go out with someone, they seem great, and they turn out to be a really difficult person. That happens. But it's also sometimes where we seem to weirdly only be attracted to that.
Yeah.
And that's different. That's where you find yourself not attracted to the nice person. You're only attracted to, you know, the bad boy, the bad girl who, you know, and then...
Or you say you're attracted to the nice person, so you go out with, but you don't connect for X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, you don't connect. You end up then desiring someone else. And so what then happens is you go, oh, the advice isn't the problem, because you already know the advice. Like, oh, I probably shouldn't go out with this person. The issue is, why can you not take the advice? Mm-hmm. And in order to get to the heart of that, you need to, in a sense, confront this other in yourself, all these various things that are going on within you. And again, that's why for most people, advice at a deep level doesn't work if you actually are trying to hurt yourself. Like the gambler who wants to lose, you know, the poker player who goes on tilt because in some way unconsciously that's what they want to do, then no amount of poker books is going to help them.
Yeah.
What they need is to work through why they want to lose.
Man, that's so fun. Yeah. It goes back to that whole thing of, you know, wanting our own. Do we actually desire what's best for us? Because it's the same thing with like anything. Like there's like, if on a day-to-day basis I act in ways that are against my well-being countless times.
Yeah.
Like it starts really well sometimes in the morning if I'm on, like right now I'm you know, peak form, like it's starting well, and then towards the end of the day it's like, who knows, like the amount of junk food that I eat and like all these things, and it's like, I know not to eat junk food, and you can tell me not to eat junk food. Maybe I'll write it in my journal not to eat junk food, but I'm still going to destroy myself in some way, which means on some level I have no problem destroying myself. And maybe do I want to on some level? Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
for sure.
this might
you
be
don't drink as much as I do without kind of wanting to take this thing out.
Yeah, there's a line in the movie that we're doing, I'm producing, where a guy's smoking, the protagonist is smoking, and the husband comes up and says, you know, they got patches for that, all of the nicotine, none of the death. And the guy says, well, that's my favorite ingredient.
Yeah, right?
But
yeah.
You go like, that's the problem with nicotine patches, you know?
I know. You're talking about toxic relationships. I'm like, toxic, fun.
Yeah, that's,
like,
that's the best. That's the bet I want, you know? Yeah. So if you create an impossible burger that is, for example, there's no cruelty in it, there's no self-harm in it, there's no nothing, you may be taking out the ingredient that unconsciously people are addicted to.
Yeah.
And now, that's not a good thing, but that's a thing to recognize is, oh my goodness, what if I smoke, not despite the fact that it'll kill me, but because weirdly, that's my favorite ingredient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a buddy who is a YouTuber, and he was going through a phase where he was like, you know, he's like, I just got to stop. I got to stop getting drunk because it affects the vlogs. Like, and I was like, do you think maybe you're just drinking because it's not... the other way around, maybe you don't want to do the vlogging and so therefore you're drinking, and it was like poof, and then all hell broke loose shortly after that, which we won't go into, but anyway,
that's a good example of the best advice, like I don't even know if you could call this advice, but it's being a kind of a midwife to something is revealing, helping the person see what is in front of them but they're not able to see.
Yeah.
So for example, you know, let's take a jealousy thing. Some people think that they're jealous because they love somebody, right? I'm jealous because I love the person. But often jealousy functions in a sense of like, you can't love someone unless you're jealous. That the person has to be jealous in order to feel desire. If they no longer felt jealous, they wouldn't feel desire. But the moment, whenever that's true of somebody, and if you say it at the right point where they go, they have an aha moment, that can be enough to help shift their behavior.
Yeah.
And in analysis, it's not a central point, but it's an important point, which is the idea that if you are able to be revealed to yourself, that can often stop the behavior, the negative behavior. Hmm. Like, for example, basically, it's like if you can expose the pleasure you get out of your suffering, you will no longer do it. So if someone is always sacrificing to their kids, always sacrificing, always bringing too many presents to their friends, always cooking big meals, like just sacrificing, and they feel it painful. They're like, I can't believe I'm always sacrificing. I'm always so nice to everybody. Nobody cares. And then you can show that maybe they get a perverse pleasure out of the sacrifice. Like, it makes them feel like people are indebted to them. It's actually a way to like be nasty to people, you know, to make them feel guilty because they don't do enough.
Yeah, right? You can never be mad at that person. You can never be mad or angry at the person who is generous toward you.
Yeah, so that can be one of the motives. So if those are right and you can bring those motives to the surface and the person can see it, the very act of seeing the pleasure that they get out of their suffering can make them go, oh yeah, I'm not going to enjoy that anymore. I'm not going to do it.
I hope it works like that, because I don't know what pleasure I get out of junk food, and I'd love to be able to kick that stuff, but man.
You don't eat too much junk food?
Dude, I
have no idea.
So much.
You do stuff and I don't even know about it.
Oh, I do. Dude, okay, here's a fun tidbit. When you were gone for a day, I was like, immediately, I was like, well, I'm definitely ordering a pizza, and I ordered a pizza, and then Pete, I got rid of the box before you came home because I didn't want you to know that I'd gotten a pizza.
The shame.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure I went into my email the next day and there were two unopened emails from separate days in the week from Domino's.
Oh.
That's not good, man.
Oh, wow.
That's two times in a week of ordering a pizza. Like a pizza. Not like, you know, it's not like I'm eating. My version of healthy is even just slightly better.
No pepperoni. That's your idea of healthy.
Basically.
Just cheese. Just the hell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheese is a vegetable.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. Yeah. But anyway, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I wish I could be like, I am doing this because I want to harm myself, therefore I won't do it anymore. But I'm not there yet. Maybe I just don't. Maybe I only know that consciously. Yeah. Whatever.
I was talking to a friend, somebody we both know, Pete Holmes.
Yes. Who's
he's a vegetarian. And we were talking about vegetarianism and, you know, and I really respect vegetarianism. I've tried it a few times. But the point being,
you need that sacrifice, though. You need that.
Yeah, well, that's what I was joking about. Yeah. He was going like, well, you know, soon we may be able to grow meat and all of that. And I'm like, yeah, but then there's no cruelty in it.
Yeah.
What if that's the problem is you're trying to convince people that you can have a non-cruel way of eating meat, but it's like, the cruelty is
what we're
so unconsciously addicted to.
Yeah, that's so funny too, because I mean, I grew up with people, you know, you like in Florida where you see, you know, a deer or a pig or something, and people are just, or a cow, and you're like, delicious, you know, it just looks delicious. You know, it's a joke, but the punchline is that you're gonna kill that thing.
Yes,
and the act of killing it is gonna make you ultimately very happy because you're going to eat it.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm not against hunting necessarily, but I do notice this with, you know, in hunting is, of course, well, I suppose it's actually less hypocritical because the pleasure of the cruelty is obvious. I think that's why some people don't like hunters, is the pleasure of the cruelty is less obvious when you go into a supermarket and, you know, you just buy this meat. But you, with a hunter, they go out and they hunt. And of course the hunter will then eat the food. But I think sometimes that's because they're kind of, they have to. I've seen it's really bad. Like, you wonder, is more of the pleasure in the killing or in the eating? And maybe it's equal, but the point is hunting probably makes that addiction to cruelty more clear than what we here, I don't hunt. Now, my cruelty is much more unconscious.
Yeah, I have a very soft spot for hunting because I grew up around it, and I definitely am like a, you know, I personally don't do it, but and have no interest in doing it. But I definitely get like the sort of, I went to like the, when I was a kid, I would go to like the, what's it called? It's like the Ducks Unlimited or something like that. It's like it's an organization, basically. It's like very pro hunting, and they would sort of do the young educational things on hunting. And it was always very interesting, and it stuck with me. But that kind of like, you know, hunting is a form of population control, hunting is this, hunting is that. And at times it was...
But it is funny because it does paint the hunters as going like, listen, we've got to go out there and work on the population control. You know, I mean, it's a tough job, but someone's got to do it.
Too many,
like,
damn deer.
Like, you know, we got to clean the bins. The bins need removed. Yeah. We've got to just do it. It's like, okay, that might be true, but it isn't you're enjoying it.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's like, at least also, though, admit that it's fun. And like, fortunately, I grew up with like parents who had a very good sense of humor about it. And I had a, you know, dad who was always like, oh, it's so fun. You know, like it is, it's, that's also part of it. But, yeah. But the official thing was always like, well, it's this and it's that. And it's like, you know, you always eat the animal and therefore it's a form of, it's actually closer to the earth. And like, again, it's like, yeah, totally. But also don't pull that crap.
this is fascinating because again, there's a whole thing that if you disavow your pleasure, something can be more legitimate. So, for example, the judge who says, I take no pleasure in sentencing you to life.
Yeah.
Right? We all know whenever someone says, I take no pleasure, of course you take pleasure in it sometimes. And, you know, it's almost like we have to hide, which is, I think it's a good thing. Like the sad thing is we take pleasure from lots of things. I take no pleasure from seeing Valley Folk flop. Yeah. Of course I don't. I take lots of pleasure. Yeah. And it makes me feel superior to you.
Yeah.
You
know? But, oh, there are people waiting. Yeah. There's people waiting in the sidelines like, surely this isn't going to work. And we're like, hey, we'll see. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, when the film comes out, I'm probably not going to do any showings of it or anything because I know that the majority of my friends will hope that it's terrible.
Yeah, but it's fine.
They'll take pleasure in it. But the funny thing is we can't admit that. So, you know, your friends will all come to see your film and all be very nice. But of course, behind closed doors, everyone's going, oh, that wasn't very good, was it?
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's fine. But there is something dirty, and we should do something about this, the dirtiness of pleasure. Is that, what is it about pleasure? Like the hunter says, you know, I take no pleasure. You know, I'm not really, or it's like, oh, it's population control. Like, is that, what is it about pleasure that seems dirty, that we have to hide it so much? And
why is it that bad to just be like, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. And it might be bad or it might not be, but yeah, but the fact is that we feel it's bad. Like we feel it's funny.
That happens in the world of, you know, the dating quite a bit where it's like, oh, this is any kind of, I'll paint anything in the photo a light of like, well, it's just this, you know, and I just like, I feel like, you know, we get along, but at the same time, it's like, da, 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 da. And it's like the whole time, I'm also just ignoring the fact that like, either I'm not having fun, yeah, and so it's done, or I am having fun, and therefore the unhealthy thing will continue. But it's the act of enjoyment that is the common denominator in both things.
And I think it's partly because pleasure gets so close to the heart of how we function. So for example, telling someone your fantasy, you know, in a relationship is so often difficult because you're telling them how you get pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if they laugh at it or if they kind of don't understand it, you can feel like castrated.
It's very deep.
So there's something about our pleasures that are let's call it indiscreet, in the sense of it speaks of something about us that is private and we want to protect. So a lot of it, I think, is there's some sort of interesting link between our pleasure and our privacy,
mm-hmm,
that we feel violated in.
There's also a very like cultural and kind of religious thing where it's like, you know, a puritanical, like, oh, you know, we don't talk about those things, you keep that to yourself, da, da, da. We speak not of such atrocity. Yes, and it's like, all right. And then if you're raised in that, it becomes a muscle that I think is very well defined to just be like, oh, of course not. No, this isn't about me. This isn't about how much I enjoy promiscuous, you know, whatever, da, 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 or this particular type of porn or whatever. But anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I think The Hunter is just a very good example of something, a structure that goes on in all of us. Like, I basically put my cruelty on. I pay another, a company to be cruel to animals so I don't have to. But,
right.
But The Hunter, in a sense, is someone who is less hypocritical because the hunter probably is someone who goes, yeah, I do enjoy it, and I eat the food, whereas you can't admit to that part of being human.
Yeah.
And so you pay a company to do all the cruelty for you, but you know they're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very few people don't know that cows are probably not the happiest creatures in the world,
right,
you know, but we just don't want to know it. So when I see animal rights people, I'll often not want to look at their literature. Not because they're going to tell me something I don't know. They're going to tell me something I know, but I don't want to know that I know. Because I like, oh, I'm going to find out that they do terrible things to animals. Of course I know that.
Yeah,
I just don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it. But in psychoanalysis, the idea is it's only in seeing it and admitting it that change can happen. Like in Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to face and admit your alcoholism as the first step to being able to change.
Oh, that's great. That's beautiful. You're a little under the weather.
So yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah. What's a piece of advice you've gotten that is actually really good that you stuck with that was actually, is there a piece of advice? Like, it's becoming a Q&A type of thing, but I think it's a fun thing. Kanye West, the great philosopher Kanye West.
Oh yes. He said something that you took to heart. Or was it like a stream of... What
he
was
said
that?
A lot of things that I take to heart. And he says a lot of things that I do not take to heart.
Yeah. But I think there was something very funny you showed me.
George Bush hates black people, I think, is the one that I really took to... No.
there was some thread on Instagram you showed me once. I can't remember even what it was, but I remember it was Kanye West.
Yeah, I think he's a fascinating person. But, you know, he has the line where it's like, I only take... advice from people more successful than me.
Oh, yeah.
I think certain things like that. I think that I would rather take advice on who to take advice from. That is actually something I do listen to. That's the type of advice that if you go, don't take advice from people who did it, I'm like, that's actually tangible.
And the great thing is that leaves open millions of people for you to take advice from. I mean, that opens it up to everybody.
Most comedians.
Yes.
Definitely most YouTubers. Yes. 99.9% of YouTubers.
Yeah. And almost everybody who just thinks they're a bit funny but has never done it professionally.
Exactly, yeah. People who just are whimsically and peripherally aware of a punchline. Yeah. Boring people. But anyway, yeah, there's that. And then there's another philosopher who I love is named Ben Folds. And he has a line where he's like, when you've lived to be 200, it's a song called Phone in the Pool, or Phone in a Pool. But it's about when you've lived to be 200, feel free to proffer your advice. But until then, here's my auto reply. I think that's a very nice like sentiment. I think there's also like another good piece of advice is to just say F it and do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Listen to yourself, because I don't know what anybody is going through. And it's so much pressure to be like, oh, what's the right word? And I've had to literally like consciously just be like, I'm going to not do it. I'm not going to like, I'm going to just exit the advice realm a little bit and be like, I am not the one to give you advice.
The difficulty is because even like it's, I think I've quoted this before, but Soren Kierkegaard has a great line about basically, you know, someone who is successful in love and who then wants to give advice on how to be successful in love. He says, it is like a person has fallen off a cliff and through happenstance has bounced off various rocks and trees and all of that and survived the fall and is now giving lectures on how to survive falling off a cliff.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Because in some ways, like we both know this, but success is a lot of luck, a lot of happenstance. There's definitely... perseverance is deeply important, and developing your skill set is incredibly important. But there's a, you know, if YouTube is a good example of very famous people becoming famous for maybe terrible reasons.
Yeah.
And then of course there's people who are incredibly brilliant who have no success or fame whatsoever. So like when people used to ask me, how did I start my community in Belfast? I'm like, well, had a few drinks. I was talking to my French tutor and said, oh, I want to do an event in this pub that I was sitting in, and then talked to the guy who owned it. And it's like, that's not exactly a good recipe for success. Oh, how do I get successful in building community? Well, have a few too many Guinnesses.
Yep.
And go to some random barman and ask him to do an event that you've got no idea what you're doing.
But I mean, if we're going to dissect it, like you can always retroactively, there's things in that people can take value from. Like, have drinks, like relax, chill out,
talk to friends,
talk to people,
have the courage to do stuff that you don't know whether you're an expert in, because I definitely was like, I don't really know what I'm doing, I'm going to try it.
And there
is advice, because then, you know, I convinced other people to work with me to create this artistic space, and I was kind of like, I pretended I knew what I was doing, to give the confidence so that the group would be able to create something. And yeah. Like, okay, well, you know, that's not bad advice.
Yeah, faking it is definitely, yeah. Faking it till you make it is good stuff.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So yeah, there is interesting advice that's occasionally useful, as long as you're not into self-sabotage, and as long as you're able to listen to that other within yourself. Those are two really important elements.
Yeah, I think there's so much focus that we're putting on the advice giver that there's not a lot of focus on the advice taker, and that would be one, just be as discerning as possible with
yeah.
people.
Yeah, realizing that often what a person says is reflective of them giving themselves advice about something. I had this just the other day. I was in coffee with a friend, and they would try to give me some advice, and it was interesting, but I did kind of get the feeling that some of what they were saying was giving themselves advice.
That's about so fun. Something That's different. So interesting.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to know what the details were for that. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's this advice, as much as I think it's tempting to be like, none of it ever works, I think a lot of it is good. I think a lot of it is fun. But I also think that, like, I tend to assume that the best pieces of advice are ones where it involves some level of me being unhappy, and or at least temporarily unhappy. It's very rare that a good piece of advice does not involve me experiencing some kind of discomfort.
Yeah.
For that is either varying levels of intensity, but like if I'm any piece, like talking to the bartender at when you're starting your community is a painful, for many people would be a very painful idea to talk to a stranger about, like, to be so presumptuous that you want to just be like, hey, I'm going to go from this anonymous stranger to now being somebody who wants to work with you on a professional basis because I have a goal of creating a community unlike, you know, anything that's around here right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, that takes a certain type of gall and a certain type of like temporary entering into that discomfort to get past that. But that's also like, you know, everything. So that's like my guiding thing, where people, if the piece of advice doesn't lead me towards some level of pain, then I'm probably like, then I'm like, that's probably not a good piece of advice. And I'm probably still going to, I might still follow it because I deep down might at that time want the least painful.
Yes, that's right. Because the unconscious element of yourself is unconscious because it's something you don't want to face. It's a pleasure or a fear or something you don't want to face. So by definition, when someone says something that momentarily unlocks that or lets you glimpse it, it will feel uncomfortable because you're being confronted with something that you know, but you do want to know.
Yeah.
You know. But I have this dilemma because I run retreats that are creative retreats. So this Spark thing I do where I help people become writers and speakers and artists. And I have to work very subtly because, you know, one sense there is advice. People want to come and go, okay, well, you know, give me some advice on how to write a book or how to get a publisher. But then sometimes it's not about giving advice at all. It's about creating a space where people can work out, why have I not yet written the book that I want to write? I have a friend who wanted to write a children's book. It was very short and she hadn't written it for like 10 years because there's always something getting in the way. But I'm like, it's a book that's about 1,000 words long. You don't want to write this. We have to, instead of me giving you advice about how to write a book, I need to help you work out why you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You want to do it, but you also don't want to do it. So a lot of the work that I do at these retreats and festivals is not a little bit of advice giving for the people who are just going, yeah, I actually am ready to take the next step. But then a lot of it is actually refusing to give advice and creating a space where people can go, what is it that is standing in my way? What are the roadblocks? Why am I self-sabotaging? And those are things that you can't give advice on because you're not that person. You don't know they're unconscious. You've just got to create an environment where it can come up to the surface.
So I feel like there's the difference is like, advice is something that will in some way engage both people's unconscious or can.
Mm, yeah, can, yeah.
Yeah, and then you end up, and then the alternative are things like tips where it's like, this is just objectively good practices.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like I'm not going to get, like if you want to write a book, a tip would be, you know, write every day. I don't know.
Well,
write every day.
That's a good thing because, you know, almost to try to make a distinction and here you're saying between advice and a tip. For example, people have given me tips about what camera to use
yeah.
when I'm doing video stuff. I'm like, you know, it's not like I'm not going to take advice from someone who, you know, knows more. Yeah. Like, of course I am, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, a tip is more of a nice little tidbit of information that is useful. But advice, like as in how you should live your life, that is it, really what's best is for us to just start to find out what's going on within us that we're not facing. Why do we self-sabotage? All of that kind of stuff. So yeah, I like that distinction between advice, which probably is best to try to listen to the other in yourself. And not yourself. That's different from listening to yourself. It's like, listen to yourself. No, don't listen to yourself. That's the last right. person to listen to. It just talk, but then maybe through journaling or therapy or an intelligent friend, they feed back and help you see what you do want to see.
Yeah.
And then tips are just useful little
things
on the journey.
Yeah, there's like I hesitate to be like, I get so against advice oftentimes, but it sounds like a cool element that seems to be a through line here is that it is a way that two people can communicate in almost a more honest way, because you can just sort of like, if both parties in the exchange of quote unquote advice mm-hmm. are being as honest with themselves as possible, you can learn both about yourself and about the other person, which is really fun. Like there's very few, like I think modes of conversation that allow that to happen.
Yeah. And that's true. Like most communication is communication with another person, with yourself, and advice giving, it becomes most obvious. The person who's asking for the advice is in a sense asking that person, as we talked about, because they want to hear what they want to hear. The person giving the advice is potentially saying something about their own life.
Yeah.
So the two people are both talking to each other and talking to themselves.
Have you ever had somebody? I also feel sometimes like the person asking for advice, and I don't know if I've done. I'm sure I've done this, but like you do the thing where you're like, "Hey, can I get your opinion on something?" So and then they like go off on almost like a brag. Have you ever had that?
Oh,
happen where
I think I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I'd love your advice on this. So I've written. I've written six books in the past, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, that is funny. That's where you're kind of, the person wants to symbolically get your recognition.
I want your advice. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yes.
Yeah. You want to tell me something?
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing where the person's communicating with you, but they're communicating about themselves and with themselves.
Here's my advice. Bullshit less.
Yeah.
That's my big piece of advice. Don't bullshit a bullshitter, I think, because there's a good piece of advice.
Very
cool. Good. Well, where are we at? Let's see how we're doing.
Yeah.
I think we nailed it. Wow. My takeaway would be just that. I think that advice is an excellent way to get to know yourself and get to know somebody else. And if you are discerning and on both giving and receiving, you can make potentially wiser decisions if you carry with you the idea that possibly you were going to do that all along, or that you're not having your best interest in mind.
Cool. And my takeaway is, like, maybe whenever you're seeking advice, momentarily ask yourself, oh, why am I seeking the advice from that person?
Yeah.
What does that tell me? If you're giving advice, after you've given advice, maybe think, oh, I wonder if that was communicating something about myself
I needed
to hear. And then ask yourself as well, is in terms of advice, is it difficult for me to succeed in certain areas of life because I'm actually self-sabotaging myself? And so I'm not actually wanting to even listen to good advice. I'm always going to, you know, sabotage myself. So why am I doing that? So in other words, two things. One is open yourself up to listening to the other within yourself, the unconscious within yourself. And secondly, ask yourself to what extent you self-sabotage. You know, you might have to unpick that before you can kind of move forward with your life.
Can I ask you a piece of advice, Pete?
Absolutely. What should you do about the bank?
What? No, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I think I figured it out while we were talking. What should I do to stop self-sabotaging all the time? Because I know I do.
Do you?
Oh,
self-sabotage?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have to figure out what it is that's causing you to self-sabotage. So we have to drill down into a particular area of your life where that happens. And
just professionally.
Just, yeah.
that's the only area.
That's the only, yeah, like, yeah. Whenever someone says that, like, yeah, that's the only thing. That's it.
Don't
that's
ask it. Any other questions. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
All right. Take care.